Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we open with the latest COVID-19 news locally and nationally, including San Diego County's new rules and guidelines on wearing masks. Then we'll tell you about the El Cajon Recreation Department's new virtual rec center with lots of activities to keep you and your family fit and entertained at home. Plus, we'll have information on food distributions and on an extension to sign up for Covered California if you need health care insurance. From Public News Service, we'll have reports on efforts to protect California's desert tortoises, controversy over a federal rollback in emission and clean air standards, and postponement of the Democratic National Convention due to COVID-19. Hear about a local nonprofit that's fulfilling wish lists for homebound seniors. And then we'll have some ideas to spark your creativity during quarantine. Hear why blood donors are needed locally and how you can help save lives. And then on the second half of our show today, we have an interview taped back in February with Santee Councilman Stephen Houlihan. He's running for mayor, and he'll be talking about his ideas for the future of Santee. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. America has now lost nearly twice as many people to COVID-19, the new coronavirus, as were killed in the 9/11 terrorism attacks in 2001. Nearly 6,000 U.S. lives have been lost to the disease, and more than 250,000 cases are confirmed nationwide. That's a fourth of all the cases worldwide. Here in California, there are over 9,100 cases and more than 200 deaths. In San Diego County, as of Friday morning when we're taping this show, there are 966 confirmed cases and 16 deaths. Now, that includes an outbreak tied to the Palm Care Pharmacy in El Cajon and a 25-year-old pharmacy technician who died. On Thursday, the county announced some new rules, very important, requiring workers to wear masks if they're working in grocery stores, pharmacies, gas stations, or other essential businesses that interact with the public. County health officials are also recommending that members of the public now wear masks when going into public places, but not medical-grade masks. Don't go buy the N95 masks that need to be kept available to protect medical workers in hospitals and other healthcare settings who are working to save lives treating COVID-19 patients. Instead, the public is urged to use cloth masks, which can include homemade masks, scarves, or bandanas tied over the nose and mouth if no other masks are available to you. The Washington Post reports that the nation's stockpile of ventilators and other critical medical equipment is running dangerously low. States have been forced to compete in a global marketplace where price gouging and profiteering are rampant. Now, Vice President Mike Pence's task force has just banned the export of critical medical equipment. But reports in The Intercept, CNN, and other media reveal that for months now, while other nations were locking down their medical supplies and prohibiting exports to protect their own people, the U.S. has allowed companies to profit by exporting ventilators, masks, respirators, and more to countries around the world, even as American hospitals and doctors pleaded for this equipment here to save lives. And now, in New York City, where hospitals are overwhelmed and running out of ventilators, paramedics are being told not to bring adult patients with heart failure to the hospitals unless they can be revived first with CPR somewhere else. The San Diego-based aircraft carrier, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, reportedly has many sailors ill with the coronavirus and is currently in Guam, where many of them are being brought ashore. The ship's captain, Brett Crozier, was fired by the Secretary of the Navy after a letter that he sent pleading for help to save lives of his crew was leaked to the San Francisco Chronicle. His crew, however, cheered their captain as he left the ship on Thursday after being relieved of duty for trying to save their lives. Health experts are predicting the pandemic may peak in the next 2 weeks or so. The public is urged to follow state and county stay-at-home orders, except for essential needs such as food, medicine, caring for a relative, friend, walking dogs, or exercising. Sheriff Gore has announced that deputies will begin enforcing the emergency orders against essential businesses that are open but not maintaining social distancing. Any non-essential businesses still open or individuals away from home for non-essential reasons may also be cited and fined up to $1,000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for April the 3rd, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. The New York Times reporting that Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is putting himself in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. They cite a recent example where the federal government's emergency manager called Kushner to get the go-ahead to announce he'd use wartime production powers to produce 60,000 badly needed coronavirus test kits. The New York Times reports that Kushner gave the thumbs up, and among those surprised by the announcement was President Donald Trump.
El Cajon's Parks and Recreation site has set up a virtual recreation and resource center filled with free fun, education, and resources for kids and adults to enjoy at home. These include yoga and fitness videos and energetic indoor games for staying fit. The El Cajon Rec Department also has a list of other resources on its website, such as links to take a virtual ride at Disneyland, explore national parks online, watch Broadway shows, visit museums around the world, find educational programming, fun ideas for preschoolers, learning opportunities from NASA scientists online, book readings for children, art lessons, and ideas on crafts that you can make from recycled items. In addition to the El Cajon Recreation Department's website, you can also follow El Cajon Rec on social media, such as Twitter and Instagram, for even more ideas to keep your mind and body fit during the COVID-19 stay-at-home orders. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
If you need food assistance during these challenging times, Feeding San Diego is offering extra food distribution sites across San Diego County, including urban, rural, and mountain communities. There are no requirements to access these. You can get a list of food distribution locations, dates, and times at feedingsandiego.org. You can also find links at their website, feedingsandiego.org, to sign up for CalFresh Benefits, the program formerly known as food stamps. Help is also available by calling 211 or visiting 211sandiego.org. In addition, seniors age 60, their caretakers, and disabled veterans of any age up can get nutritious hot meals delivered to their homes through the Meals on Wheels program. Meals on Wheels is also looking for more volunteers to make deliveries to seniors. You can call Meals on Wheels at 619-260-6110 or visit meals-on-wheels.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
If you lack health insurance or you lost it due to the COVID-19 crisis, there's some good news today. Covered California has extended the enrollment deadline to June 30th. If you already have a Covered California plan, you may be eligible for a reduction in your premiums if your income has gone down substantially, such as due to a business shutdown or job loss. To apply or learn more, you can visit coveredca.com or call 1-800-300-1506. From now until June 30th, anyone who meets Covered California's eligibility requirements can enroll in health care coverage similar to with the rules in place during the annual open enrollment period. To support the state's social distancing recommendations, Covered California is working with over 10,000 certified insurance agents to help Californians sign up and understand coverage options through free phone service in multiple languages. And you can also have a certified enroller call you. Consumers can find out if you're eligible for Medi-Cal or other forms of financial help also and see which plans are available in your area by using the coveredca.com shop and compare tool. Just enter your zip code, household income, and ages of those needing coverage. Covered California is the state's health insurance marketplace and the only place where people who qualify can get financial help on a sliding scale to reduce your premium costs. You can then compare health insurance plans through different companies and choose the plan that works best for your health needs and your budget. Depending on income, you may be able to qualify for the low-cost or no-cost Medi-Cal program, too. For more information about Covered California, you can visit coveredca.com. And again, that phone number is 1-800-300-1506. 300-1506. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Groups that promote public health and clean air and that advocate for consumers all are vowing to fight the Trump administration's new rollback of vehicle emissions standards. The new rule was finalized on Tuesday. Dave Cook with the Union of Concerned Scientists slams the administration for pushing the change during the COVID-19 crisis.
This rollback defies science and common sense. It hurts the economy and the climate, and it's appalling that they'd still try to push it through in the middle of a crisis.
Administration officials say the plan will allow automakers to produce cheaper cars, which should encourage Americans to trade in their older vehicles. But opponents of the change point out that lower fuel economy means people will pay more at the pump. The nationwide standards require an improvement of 1.5% per year in fuel economy, less than the standard set by the Golden State. Dave Friedman with Consumer Reports notes that California and 23 other states are suing to regain the right to set higher standards.
Many groups are already moving forward to challenge this in the courts. And because it is such a weak rule that is not based on facts, not based on the data, not based on the science, we're expecting that that should have a very positive outcome for consumers.
Dominique Browning with Moms Clean Air Force says the administration should respect California's policies, which were designed to combat air pollution and climate change.
Vice President Pence, during this pandemic, has been talking about state rights, and I find it hypocritical that he would do so about ventilators and disrespect state rights when it comes to cleaner cars.
And Lauren Faber O'Connor, Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of Los Angeles, thinks the feds are favoring big oil over public health.
A public health crisis demands united action to keep people safe, not short-sighted steps to undermine people's lives. This administration should not use the COVID-19 emergency as a convenient excuse to pursue dangerous policies that place corporate polluters ahead of the health and welfare of everyday Americans.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. The desert tortoise is dangerously close to extinction in California, according to a petition filed this week by conservation groups. Advocates are asking the California Fish and Game Commission to upgrade the species' status from threatened to endangered. Pamela Flick with Defenders of Wildlife says California's state reptile may move slowly, but its decline in the wild has been a lot faster.
Adult tortoise population numbers have dropped by over 50% in some recovery areas just since 2004, and by as much as 80 to 90% in some habitats since approximately 1980.
Research shows the animals are falling victim to a variety of threats, including uncontrolled off-road vehicle use, livestock grazing on wildlands, the spread of contagious disease, disruption from highway and utility projects, and extended droughts likely associated with climate change. Flick says inadequate protective measures taken over the past few decades have failed.
Despite 30 years of federal and state protections as a threatened species, the desert tortoise is closer to extinction than it was in 1990 when it was first listed.
Last year, the Trump administration moved to relax restrictions on off-road vehicles on federal land in the California desert and has signaled plans to loosen them even further by amending the Obama-era Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan. If the commission accepts the petition, it would trigger a 12-month review of the tortoise's threatened status. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. Civil rights activist and president of the People's Alliance for Justice Shane Harris has launched a new fund to serve vulnerable seniors across San Diego County during the COVID-19 public health crisis. Volunteers will deliver toiletries as well as food to seniors ages 65 and older at home. If you are a senior in need, you can call 619-354-8054. Volunteers and donations are also needed. Reverend Harris launched the initiative after the governor called on seniors to stay home due to their vulnerability to the new coronavirus, but that's left them isolated. Seniors can order up to 10 items, including food, as well as products such as toothpaste, dish soap, denture cream, paper towels, laundry soap, and more. Volunteers will shop at local discount stores wearing gloves and masks for the deliveries if the People's Alliance for Justice does not already have the requested items on hand. Reverend Harris says we are always going to be a voice for the voiceless, and he adds, we will keep our volunteers safe during this time as they do service, but we will not let this crisis stop us as the younger generation from protecting and supporting our seniors in any way possible. If you would like to volunteer, donate, or you're a senior in need of a home delivery wish list, you can contact 619-354-8051.
Creativity can blossom out of hardship. As you're hunkered down at home due to the COVID-19 epidemic, consider this. During historic epidemic eras, some of the world's most famous writers, artists, and scientists drew inspiration for their greatest works. Today, we have some of their stories, along with where you can find free online classes in writing, art, science, and music to spark your own creative impulses. When the bubonic plague closed Elizabethan theaters in 1606, actor and theater shareholder William Shakespeare found himself out of work during the quarantine. He is believed to have composed some of his greatest plays that year, including King Lear, Antony and Cleopatra, and Macbeth, as well as taking up poetry. Isaac Newton's theory of gravity had its seeds in the physicist's self-quarantining during 1665. His studies at Cambridge University in England were canceled due to the bubonic plague, so Newton retreated to his family's estate in the countryside, where he produced some of his best works. There, he wrote papers on calculus and developed his theory of optics while playing with prisms. His theory on gravity also began while in confinement during the epidemic. While there's no evidence behind the folktale of an apple hitting him in the head and inspiring his gravitational levitations, he reportedly did gaze at an apple tree outside of his window. Artist Edvard Munch, best known for his painting The Scream, caught the Spanish flu in 1919 while living in Norway, but survived. His painting, Self-Portrait with the Spanish Flu, is one of the several paintings and studies he created while documenting his battle with the disease that killed 50 million people around the world. During the current coronavirus worldwide, many musical artists are producing works while isolating at home. At least 65 songs with coronavirus in the title have popped up on Spotify. Neil Diamond has created a video at home of his new coronavirus-themed parody of Sweet Caroline. Many artists are also releasing playlists of suggested songs to listen to while at home isolating in the current crisis, including some inspirational and upbeat songs as well as moody and reflective pieces. If you're feeling inspired to try your hand at unleashing your own creativity while in confinement, here are some free online resources to find classes in writing, drawing, science, music, and more. ClassCentral.com, ThoughtCo.com, Courses.com, and Skillshare.com.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process.
There's simply no responsible way to schedule a convention a couple months from now in person with thousands of people congregating in one room, unless you just want that room to serve as a petri dish for breeding a disease.
University of Iowa computer science professor Douglas Jones agrees with Democrats' decision to push their July Democratic National Convention back to August 17th, just before the Republican National Convention is set to start on the 24th. But he says both parties need to rethink all their conventions. There are lots of logistics, such as printing deadlines for the November elections, absentee overseas ballots.
Pushing the convention back into August is at the very edge of what's feasible in terms of running the fall election.
DNC officials are discussing ways to scale it back. Though Jones thinks a virtual convention is doable and might be necessary, it would definitely be, quote, weird.
The speeches would all be given from people's basement offices or living room couches or things like that. No, you wouldn't hear any applause.
The Biden campaign and the DNC want an in-person convention if it can be done safely. The Institute for Public Accuracy's Michael Brennan agrees.
If it's transitioned to being like a digital convention, I think that would really hamper the ability for the opposition and that discontent to be voiced to the detriment of the Democrats, really. I think that it's an important part of a lowercase d democratic process.
Former Vice President Joe Biden called for the convention's delay, but thinks an in-person voting option in Wisconsin next week is possible.
I listened to the scientists. A convention having tens of thousands of people in one arena is very different than having people walk into a polling booth with accurate spacing to 6 to 10 feet apart, one at a time going in and have machines scrubbed down.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is urging postponement, but Biden says it's not up to the candidates.
I think you could hold the election as well, dealing with mail-in ballots and same-day registration. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done. That's for the Wisconsin courts and folks to decide.
Yesterday, a judge did extend the Wisconsin deadline to request absentee ballots, but sided with Governor Tony Evers in not delaying Tuesday's primary. Evers himself issued a month-long stay-at-home order, and many fellow Democrats and voting rights advocates still say in-person options need to be delayed. But there are important reasons not to postpone, according to University of Wisconsin-Madison Professor Barry Burden.
It's not just a presidential primary, it's also an election for a bunch of offices, state Supreme Court and a bunch of local elections. So moving back the timing of the primary would actually affect the ability to put new office holders in place as old office holders are moving out.
And in Wyoming, Alaska, and Hawaii, tomorrow's originally scheduled primaries were converted to vote by mail, so results may take weeks. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
This is Mitchell Murphy with a public service announcement from the San Diego Blood Bank. The San Diego Blood Bank urgently needs blood donations due to the COVID-19 crisis. School closures and work-from-home policies have resulted in canceled blood drives at schools and workplaces. The blood bank collects more than half of its blood supply on blood mobiles from these mobile blood drives. David Welles, CEO of the San Diego Blood Bank, warns the U.S. is on the verge of a serious blood shortage that will lead to blood rationing and triage. We need healthy people to come out to donate immediately. He adds, supplies are dropping to critical levels. We are confident the San Diego community will rally around this urgent need. The blood bank assures that safety measures are in place to protect donors, with all donors screened on arrival and surfaces cleaned between blood donations. There is no evidence that donating blood affects a donor's ability to fight infections later, and there is no evidence of any risk of COVID-19 transmission through blood transfusions. Dr. Brett Greyer, Assistant Secretary of Health, says it's safe to donate blood, adding part of preparedness includes a robust blood supply. Healthy individuals should schedule an appointment to donate today to ensure that blood is available for patients who need it. All blood types are needed, and people who have never donated before are encouraged to donate. Donors must be 17 years or older, weigh a minimum of 114 pounds, and be in general good health. To find a blood donation center near you and make an appointment, visit sandiegobloodbank.org/givelife or call 619-400-8251. Again, that's sandiegobloodbank.org/givelife or dial 619-400-8251.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Next up, we have an interview with Stephen Houlihan, councilman from Santee, who's running for mayor. And this interview was taped back in February, before the primary, before the COVID-19 crisis. So if you're wondering why that issue isn't addressed in the interview, that's the reason. But he's still got plenty to say on a lot of other important issues affecting the future of Santee. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Stephen Houlihan. Stephen is a member of the Santee City Council, and now he's running for mayor, challenging incumbent Mayor John Minto. Councilman Houlihan holds an MBA or Master's in Business Administration degree. He's also a registered nurse with a Master's in Nursing and Healthcare Systems Administration. Before running for the council, he led the successful effort to stop the Quail Brush Power Plant near Santee and Mission Trails. He and his wife and son live in Santee, and he drives Highway 52 every day. He's running on a platform of preserving Santee's quality of life and scenic views, preventing overdevelopment without appropriate infrastructure, while assuring that the city remains fiscally strong. He says he wants to provide homegrown leadership with hometown values, placing residents first. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, tell us what your main reason is for running for mayor, given that it means vacating your council seat to do so, since both seats are up for re-election at the same time.
Yes, Miriam, it's a huge move. It's a huge commitment to be on the council and an even bigger commitment to run for mayor and to be the mayor. And I believe that I am the best candidate and the best person to be the mayor of Santee. Reason being, in 2018, I brought forth two initiatives to the people of Santee. The first being the Santee General Plan Protection Initiative, and the second being term limits for the Santee City Council. And I believe that the general plan is the best plan forward for Santee, and I believe it's worth protecting. I have great concerns that the council could basically change at will the zoning of any portion of the general plan in the city of Santee. And I just don't believe that that is the will of the people.
So as I understand it, the concern about general plan amendments is that the council, if you have a pro-development leaning council, they could push through something like Finita Ranch or other massive housing sprawl type developments, even if it's something that wouldn't be allowed under the current general plan. So the Santee general plan amendment, as I understand it, it would give the voters of Santee a say-so on large development projects. Doesn't mean they couldn't be built, but it means if it violates the general plan, it would have to go to a vote of the people.
Absolutely. The Santee General Plan Protection Initiative is bringing back democracy to the people of Santee. It's the wish, the will of the people of Santee to vote on these big issues. 70% of the people in Santee must drive to work each and every day outside of the city of Santee. The vast majority of them are taking Highway 52. They're heading west in the morning and they're heading east in the evenings. And their commute has just become staggering.
Yeah.
I endure that commute every day twice. And so I felt like I just had to act on the behalf of the people of Santee to carry out their will.
How would you balance demand for housing and those state mandates for more affordable homes now against those who are concerned about protecting your open spaces out in Santee and, of course, preventing even more traffic gridlock?
Indeed, growth is necessary. A community that is not growing is dying. And if you were to analyze the Santee General Plan, you would see that there is actually a planned development for each and every parcel throughout the entire city. So when you drive through Santee and you see a green space, the general plan has an accounting for that green space. And so I am a supporter of infill development within the natural borders of Santee that exist today. I have grave concerns about going out into the wilderness, specifically to the north, where the Cedar Fire basically decimated the area.
Yeah.
And it happened twice. So it happened in 2003. It happened in 2007. We have instances just in the last year or so of the Paradise Fire, for which many individuals perished.
Yeah, in Northern California, because they couldn't get out. That's a good point. When you already have gridlock and then you're talking about putting in thousands more homes without an evacuation plan, it really puts not only the existing residents but the new residents' lives at risk.
In fact, it does. And so my concern is we already have a difficult time getting to work in the morning. And that's because everyone's getting up and we're all going to work. We're working folks. However, if there was a catastrophe at any hour, we're all going to hit the road at the exact same time. And I just could not live with myself if that catastrophe led to the loss of life. I've been a registered nurse for 20 years. My business is saving life, not allowing individuals to perish, especially if it was a bad decision that I had any part in.
Regardless of whether these new projects like Bonita Ranch get built or not, there already is a massive traffic gridlock problem, as you've noted, especially on Highway 52 and also some of the surface streets. Do you have any ideas for what can be done to reduce the existing traffic gridlock problems that Santee has?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a campaign of misinformation that has been set forth and tried to been passed off to the people of Santee in regards to these developments. And the truth is that a study was done, and that study was paid for by one of the developers, and it was an expensive study, and it was millions of dollars. And the study had three parts, or three solutions. The big solution was a billion-dollar solution to fix the 52 and make it much like the 15 corridor. That would have been spectacular. Unfortunately, that is never going to happen.
Too much money.
And Caltrans are simply not going to fund it. Then there was a intermediate or moderate fix that would have just knocked out the bottlenecks and made it just tolerable. And that plan would have been phased out in two sections. First, it would have been a portion of that plan would have been developed between the year 2020 and 2035. And then a secondary portion would have been developed from 2035 to 2050. And again, with Sandag's changes in leadership and lack of funding through Sandag, et cetera, that plan has also been nixed. There was a mini plan that was basically a restriping of the bridges and basically the movement of barricades that already exist on top of asphalt and concrete that is there, and to move the bike lane to the other side of the freeway. No concrete or asphalt would be poured. It would be mostly a restriping project. This is a $30 million project potentially. However, this $30 million project will be funded partially by the federal government and partially by Sandag. And so through the efforts of the 52 Coalition and the City Council of Santee, lobbyists have been hired, and those lobbyists have been working to move Santee to the front of the line as far as for acquisition of these funds. And so potentially $15 million could come from the federal government as soon as next year or the year after. And we've worked with Sandag to put aside an additional $15 million to match the federal government. This is being done regardless of the developments that come into Santee. This is being done by the Santee City Council currently, not by any developer, not by anyone else. And so we expect that that next year we will yet again apply for this grant, and we are hoping that that $15 million grant will be given to Santee, because we have now asked Sandag to set aside $15 million in matching funds. And when you have the matching funds, the federal government's more likely to give you the yeah. seed money.
Yeah,
and so this is happening without
point.
The development. So anything that might be out there about if there's no development, there's going to be no fixes at the freeway is absolutely untrue.
Thank you for clarifying that. What about the possibility of bringing more jobs to East County so that you'd have fewer people having to leave Santee to commute somewhere else.
That is the crux of the problem. We need to be increasing our light industrial, our retail spaces, our office spaces, and our commercial spaces in Santee. The Santee City Council voted 4-1, and I was the no vote, to study the repercussions of the Santee General Plan Protection Initiative. That study caused the General Plan Initiative to miss the deadline per the Registrar of Voters and was forced from the 2018 vote to the 2020 vote.
Yeah, so it's finally now coming up for a vote.
It will be coming up for a vote in 2020 for the people of Santee. However, the study revealed that the Santee General Plan, as it is today, creates adequate capacity in residential development to last to the year 2050.
Wow.
For 30 years. There is no need to add that capacity at this time, especially with the infrastructure being insufficient to move the citizens of Santee at this time.
Okay. Another major issue facing Santee, and of course the entire region and state, is homelessness. Stephen, what steps would you take to reduce homelessness in Santee?
Homelessness is a huge issue. And again, I've been a registered nurse for over 20 years. I started my nursing career, or my career in healthcare, as a mental health worker, working in, I would say, what used to be called a sanitarium environment. And many of these people were homeless. As a nurse, I have seen homelessness up close. Working in the ICU at Sharp Memorial Hospital, often we would have patients come in who had terrible exposure, homeless individuals who are freezing to death. I've seen the ugly face of homelessness. However, the broad brush stroke attempts by Sacramento to alleviate homelessness through unfettered sprawl is simply not the answer. These people need programs that are tailor-made to their specific problem. Some people have mental illness. Some people have drug addiction. Some people have both. Some people have fallen on hard times.
Yeah.
Some people simply don't want to be found. And so in Santee, what we've done is we actually have a psychiatric evaluator accompany law enforcement in any interactions with our homeless population, which is very small in Santee, but there is a transient aspect of people who come and those who go. We basically know everybody by name, and we try to meet their needs to the best of our ability. Many of those people simply want to be left alone, and so it's not a matter of going and buying a large house and sticking them in that house. That's not going to work because we simply couldn't afford that. We need to first of all try to meet their medical needs. A lot of times people have diabetes and other issues. We need to look at their immediate needs as far as food. And then we can also look at shelter for the short term, especially during times of when it's very cold. Putting a big top tent up in a parking lot is not the solution. It may look good on the news for a short time. However, those people will eventually be cast back out.
So connecting them with services, you think, is a better answer?
I absolutely know it's the best answer, because when patients come through the ICU and come through the hospital, they are usually at the end of the line.
Yeah.
And so what happens is we can actually make a huge change in their life at that point and try to pull them out of whatever despair that's led to where they are.
Where do you stand on a new library for Santee that's been promised for a long time, but it seems to continue being stalled? And last we heard is, I guess they've approved selling off the parcel that had long been promised for a library.
I absolutely am a supporter of libraries. I spent many, many years in libraries. When I was doing my master's degrees at USD, I pretty much lived in the library. I was a research assistant pulling articles out of the library. So I'm a big supporter. We also need to look at the information age. Being able to check out a laptop at the Santee Library just became a reality. But our library is far too small for the size of our city. And so we absolutely need a new library. And we've put it in our capital improvement plan so that we actually have it. It's a place marker at this point. Mm-hmm. We're looking at a $20 million library fund that needs to, you know, it's the money is just not there.
So they just need to save up some more, figure out a way to get it.
Well, the thing is typically the county administers the libraries across all of San Diego or much of San Diego. But unfortunately, there's a disconnect between the city of Santee and the county. And so at this point, the county is definitely not willing to step up and help Santee. And so Santee has a group called the Friends of the New Santee Library, and they're working diligently to make this new library a reality. However, I do not believe that the current Santee City Council has the internal fortitude to move forward on a project like this. And so yet another reason why I'm running for mayor is to champion the library and to make it a reality.
Okay, thank you for answering that. Do you support the Arts and Entertainment District that's proposed for Santee? What's one of the exciting new things maybe coming down the pike? Where do you stand on that?
I am 100% in support of the Arts and Entertainment District. This rezoning is the type of rezoning that makes sense. It's not upzoning a residential area. What it's doing is it's rezoning a commercial and industrial area that is going to be redeveloped and beautified. And it's going to be, it's just going to be a spectacular area of Santee. We're working on getting our movie theater, up and we want to get some sticks up real soon.
Yeah.
There's big giant land moving devices, doing a rough grade of that property. There's a Carl Strauss brewery that will be coming to Santee. The plans, they have not materialized as quickly as many would like. However, that was all on Carl Strauss. The microbrew industry has had some turmoil in recent years. And so what's going to happen is Carl Strauss is going to bring their headquarters and tasting room to Santee.
Yeah, exciting.
Those are going to be two showcase facilities and amenities for Santee. You mentioned the parcel that may or may not have been promised as a library. I don't believe it was the right place for our library. I want our library near our schools.
Good point.
I want it to be within walking distance for the children. I don't want it over at the end of the trolley. At the end of the trolley, potentially there could be a hotel. And it would be another capstone to that Arts and Entertainment District, for which when people come from all over the nation and world to go to Comic-Con, many of them will likely be staying in Santee, watching movies at our new movie theater, having a drink at the new Carl Strauss, and taking the trolley all the way downtown to go to the comic convention.
Yeah, cheers. That's quite a vision.
It's all going to happen.
Certainly possible, I think. We saw El Cajon put in a big hotel. A lot of people kind of weren't so sure. People were going to travel to downtown El Cajon and stay there. But from what I understand, it's full almost all of the time now. So apparently that's worked out. Santee has not yet joined a community choice energy program, unlike some of the other local cities like La Mesa and San Diego. You support such an effort, Stephen. Can you tell us what more you would do if you're mayor to move forward that idea?
Yes, I am a big supporter of community choice aggregation, or what's called community choice energy. I've been investigating and learning about these initiatives for over a decade, going all the way back to when I discovered that the Quillbrush Power Plant was planned at the Western Gateway of Santee.
Yeah.
And what I've learned over the years is that basically ratepayers are subsidizing the shareholders of Sempra. True. And so we take on all the liability when a fire breaks out in the hills and burns down our city. And then afterwards, we pay for it, even if there's a fine levied on Sempra Energy. And it's just not, it's not right. So if we're taking all the risks, then we should receive the proceeds. And so through a community choice energy program, you no longer have a guaranteed annuity to the energy industry in on Wall Street.
Right. So people would have a choice. The city of Santee would be producing the power or acquiring the power and then selling it directly to the citizens of Santee, giving them a choice. You can still buy your power from SDG&E if you want to, but if you don't want to, you can buy it from the city of Santee.
Absolutely. And remember, electricity is moving at just a fraction slower than the speed of light. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, the energy can be generated anywhere. And just to let you know, across the whole nation, Santee has the second most solar arrays of any city in the whole nation.
I had no idea, really.
We do. We've been working on this for a decade. And so Community Choice Energy will give every ratepayer in Santee a 5% discount on their electricity bill. Community Choice Energy will keep the proceeds in the city of Santee. The city of Santee has approximately a $600,000 a year electricity bill. When we finally do move to a CCA, we will create an incredible operational efficiency where we will never have to pay that every year. The city of Santee also has about a $600,000 a year fossil fuel bill. Now, for our firefighters and our sheriffs, we're going to burn dinosaur bone because they need to get where they need to go.
Yeah.
However, for city staff, we could go ahead and use renewable energy in the form of an electric vehicle with a charging station at City Hall, all funded by the CCA, which is basically money that's being diverted from Wall Street on a guaranteed annuity. And we are already taking on that liability.
Yeah.
It's a win-win. And whether you believe in climate change or not, the health of children and the elderly will benefit greatly from the diminished use of fossil fuels.
Right. You won't have all that pollution being belched up into the atmosphere for people to breathe.
That's true.
Yeah, as a nurse, I'm sure you know all about that. As a person with an MBA, Master's in Business Administration, Stephen, what steps would you take to improve Santee from a fiscal standpoint, make sure that it stays fiscally strong or is fiscally strengthened?
I am a strong believer in fiscal conservatism, and I was shocked when I first looked at the Santee budget and learned that we would start going into a deficit spending situation in the year 2021, so basically next year.
Wow.
And we like to keep a percentage of funds on reserve. And we are going to begin to exceed the recommended or required amount of reserves.
Is that because of pension liabilities or something
else? Pension liabilities, the loss of redevelopment money.
Yeah.
And also just, I believe, just the general lack of vision of the council over the years. And so the first thing that I believe needs to happen is we simply need term limits so that no one falls asleep at the wheel ever again. I'm bringing term limits of 3 terms. Somebody could do the job for 12 years. That's over a decade. It's a part-time job, and then move on. There are lots of intelligent people in our city that should be given a chance, and it's very difficult to unseat an incumbent. Now, as far as our fiscal situation, I believe that Community Choice Energy would have been a very, very good first step. And we had the opportunity to join one of the 2 regional JPAs for a 2020 launch date. And so we could have started to operationalize those efficiencies within 2 years. And it would have had a break-even point near immediately. It was a win-win for everybody. However, the Santee City Council, yet again, did not have the ability to move forward. And so unfortunately now, we're back waiting. And so that $1 million of operational inefficiency likely has evaporated for the short term. Now, remember, Santee's about a $40 million operation. So $1 million is significant. It's about a 2 to 2.5% of our margin. And so that is very important. And we should have moved forward as fiscal conservatives to try to make it happen.
You've mentioned to me that you have been a no party preference voter yourself for a long time, all the way back, you said, to the days of Ross Perot. So it's not an immediate dissatisfaction with one party or the other. You're a fiscal conservative, but you're also conservative in the sense of the old line word, value of the word that seems to have been lost, protecting our environment, clean air, clean water, and open spaces, you know, protecting our natural resources, which really is a tradition that dates back to Teddy Roosevelt.
Indeed it does. My last party affiliation was the Reform Party of Ross Perot in 1992. I believe that we needed reform in government then, and I believe we need reform in government now. And to tell you the truth, I do subscribe to the views of Theodore Roosevelt from over 100 years ago of fiscal conservatism and environmental conservatism. We can do both. Absolutely, without a doubt.
Yeah.
What we need to do is we need to look at our economy, and just like when we decided that we couldn't use whale blubber anymore for our lamps and we moved on to kerosene, well, I'm sure those that hunted the whales did not like that idea. And then when we discovered that we could use electricity instead of kerosene, well, those who sold kerosene were not happy with that idea. And so now we're yet at another energy revolution where we could, instead of using whale blubber or kerosene or fossil fuel, we can use the free energy of the sun.
Very, very interesting point of view. And thanks so much for sharing that. Who are your major endorsements so far, if you have any this early in the race? And where can people get more information on your candidacy for Santee mayor?
The only endorsement that I have and I care about is the endorsement of the people of Santee. And so I run my campaign much differently than just about any other politician that I've ever come across. I am different than every other politician. I don't even want to ask for an endorsement because I don't even know most of these politicians. I definitely don't know them on a personal level. I may have seen them in meetings. And so during my first campaign for election, when I saw these endorsements, I thought it was complete garbage, to tell you the truth. So I don't believe I need endorsements. The only endorsement I want is from the voters. And as far as what I'm going to be doing, I'm going to go door to door just like I did in 2016 and just like I did in 2018. I'm going to bring my words directly to the people.
Yeah, you were elected and then reelected by the people of Santee out there. Listeners, if you just tuned in or you tuned in late, we are speaking with Stephen Houlihan, Santee City Councilman, who has just announced that he is running for mayor. Stephen, I'm going to let you have the final word today. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about your candidacy or your priorities and goals if elected?
Yes, there is. So again, my name is Stephen Houlihan. I've been a citizen in Santee since I was a baby. I was brought to Santee in 1976. I went to elementary school at Sycamore Canyon Elementary School. I went to high school at West Hills High, class of 91, when they first built the high school. On to Grossmont College, San Diego State for my bachelor's in nursing, and on to USD for my master's in nursing and in business. I'm a fiscal conservative who has an MBA who wants to basically volunteer his time to fix the financial situation of the city I love. I've chose to buy a house in Santee. I brought my wife to Santee. I am raising my child in Santee. I plan to stay in Santee. However, I don't want Santee to have to disincorporate and become part of the county. In 1980, our forefathers of Santee stood up, and by a vote of the people, we broke away. We are rugged individuals, and we want to self-govern. And I'm running for mayor to take it back. Unfortunately, I don't believe that the will of the people is being carried out by the current city council. I believe that the people of Santee want new leadership and they want to go in a new direction. So I am going to do everything I can from a grassroots level. I will not be taking money from any developers or any outside sources. I will be taking my donations in small amounts from the people of Santee, from my family and my friends. I will put the leather to the sidewalk and I will walk and walk and walk until I get the chance to meet each and every person from Santee to talk about the issues and do things the old-fashioned way. So again, I'm here to serve the people of Santee, the city I love, and I sure would love to have your vote.
Well, very good. And we should mention, by the way, that this is Santee's 40th anniversary as a city this year. They've got a new brand, a new logo. What do you think about the rebranding?
So 40 years, Santee, from 1980 to 2020. Our new brand, Do More, Do East, is perfect. I spend a great deal of time at Mission Trails Regional Park, mountain biking, hiking, and doing all outdoor activities that I can. We just reopened Mass Park.
Yeah.
It's a $10 million gem.
You can see the photos.
On the San Diego River. It is beautiful.
Yeah. We have that on our site list too, eastcountymagazine.org.
Come and visit Santee. You might hear our Do More, Do East. Well, it should bring up some curiosity of, well, what am I going to do? And come out. We have our Sportsplex. We are developing our River Trail. We have the Walker Preserve. I coach youth sports at West Hills Little League and AYSO. There is so much to do. It's family-oriented. It's safe. You will be safe in Santee. Come and join us. Do More, Do East.
Very good. Well, Councilman Houlihan, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso to tell us about your mayoral race and everything that you would like to do if you're elected the next mayor of Santee.
My pleasure.
Next up, we have an interview with Stephen Houlihan, councilman from Santee who's running for mayor. And this interview was taped back in February, before the primary, before the COVID-19 crisis. So if you're wondering why that issue isn't addressed in the interview, that's the reason. But he's still got plenty to say on a lot of other important issues affecting the future of Santee.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.